Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana. It's Colt
Cabana. All right, how you guys doing? Come on in. Let's do it. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway into the minds, the souls, the hearts, and lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am jet lagged. I'm a guy who now goes to the gym at 3 a.m. in the morning, I guess. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler. We are sitting here live in the studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Yes, back in the United States. Before I get into it, let me tell you, this is a fan-supported and listener-supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every single Thursday on ColtCabana.com, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. A couple great ways that you can support, rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend, maybe via social media, Twitter, Facebook, however you do it. Or if you got a couple of bucks in your pocket, a couple of yen left over that you forgot to exchange at the airport, you can head on over to ColtMerch.com and DigitalColt.com. T-shirts, buttons, posters, pictures, DVDs, digital downloads, premium podcasts, episodes 1 through 35. You're wondering where they are? They're at DigitalColt.com. And make sure to check out ColtMerch.com. Yeah, getting up at 3 a.m. I mean, I'm going to bed at 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, but I'm getting up at 3, 4 a.m., and then I'm up, and then I go right to the gym. And I like for those people to believe that, like, oh, look at this guy. He's really dedicated in there at 4 a.m. No, it's just because my hours are completely fucked up. But that would be nice. Like, every time I do that from a long trip, I come back and then I wake up and then I have these horrible hours and I'm like, look at me. I'm up at 5 a.m. I'm like a real person. And then I think about how real people live and I'm like, yeah, maybe I could be a real adult, wake up at 5 a.m. And then the next day it changes to 7 a.m. But I'm still like, hey, I'm up at 7 a.m. Things are happening. And then by the next week, I'm up at 12 and I'm like, I ain't never fucking waking up at 7 a.m. But for now, I enjoy the novelty of it. I'm back from Japan. On the show this week, Drew McIntyre, Drew Galloway, what do you want to call him? You can call him, I guess, Drew Galloway now. Now that he is free to do whatever he wants and to make a statement, it's funny to see how kind of far he's came. You know, when he first got to OVW, and I've known him since he was a teenager. When he first got to OVW, too, he was this kind of scared young Scottish man, and I love how sure of himself he is, how confident he is, how much of a man he is. He's a real man. Drew Galloway and I, we get into it. We discuss some stuff. Turns out to be a pretty big weirdo. Didn't know that in a great way. I mean, he could hear that, but man, he gets into some weird stuff that I didn't know. It's like right up there with Evan Bourne and Spanky. Which says something, you know. I tip my hat to you. Of course, Galloway now the ICW heavyweight champion, the Evolve champion, doing it right, getting right out of that system and making waves right away. And you could tell, like, there's a difference between guys who do that kind of thing and guys who don't do that kind of thing. And he's obviously a guy who's still hungry, still ready to go, still ready to make a go of it. And he's back on the scene and traveling now. I know if he's not this week or a couple weeks coming up or whatever it might be, he's doing a big tour of the UK, which he's doing a lot with ICW and those guys. So I don't want this to come off weird. It's just going to come off like it's going to come off because WWE knows what they're doing. They have a system in place. They're very successful. People love them. Millions of people watch, or maybe 670,000 people watch or whatever it might be. But there's a little bit of it where that whole mid-card regime, it's like they take in these guys from the age 25 to 30, and then after 5 or 6 or 7 years, they get rid of them, and then there's nowhere else to go. It's such a monopoly, and all of these wrestlers, they define themselves as these guys, these WWE wrestlers, and Drew's, you know, one of these people. He was there, 24 to 30 or whatever it might be. You look at guys like Luke Gallows, Carlito, Chris Masters, Charlie Haas, you know, just guy, I can rifle off just hundreds of them, and it's like you do that, and then what do you do? at least in America. I mean, it's such a crazy monopoly. But at the same time, they gave these guys the opportunity to live their life's dreams. So, I mean, I get that. That's no knock on them. But it's just, it's hard because now, you know, it's just the top. They have their top guys. And then there's just this rotating cast of characters that go through. I guess like anything, like any acting or any kind of season. But it's, I guess, more close to my heart because I know the guys. So then I'm like, well, what do you guys do? Obviously, there's options for everybody. And some people make livings and some people go about it. Drew's going to be one of those guys. But to me, the rotating mid-card society of the WWE is a fascinating thing for me to think about and ponder. And that's all I can do. So I should probably stop doing that and worry about my own life, which I am doing. Back from Japan. The tour is done. Pro Wrestling Noah, class promotion in Japan. A very long tour back to America. And the more I go, I think this was my sixth tour, the more I feel like I'm settled in, like I'm getting a kind of like a nice Japanese following, like I'm becoming one of them over there. And so that was six. So I really look forward to tour number 12 and hopefully becoming like a mainstay in Japan, carving out my niche over there. There's so many guys that the Japanese look at and love with so much passion. Terry Funk, Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, Furnace and LaFon. The list goes on, and I'm trying my best that Colt Cabana is added to that list. Otherwise, business as usual. Cold merch is up. I'm going to try to add a bunch of new stuff for Black Friday. But glad to be back. Glad to be podcasting right here in my apartment. And having some fun with you guys. Oh. Song of the week this week is Stayin' with a UK theme. The UK legend, Giant Haystacks, who once wrestled in WCW's Loch Ness. I don't know if you remember that one. He is added to the list of wrestlers who try to give singing a shot. This one was suggested by @OutlawJamboree on Twitter, which is kind of what wrestlers trying to sing basically is, an outlaw jamboree. It's called Baby I Need You. Enjoy the big guy singing his heart out, and we'll be back with Drew Gallo.
Baby, baby, I love you. Baby, I need you. In my life, can't you see? Baby, stay beside me. Stay to guide me. Without you I'm lost. I love you so. Can't you see it's true love? Come on now girl, what you gonna do? Baby, should you find another? Sure is not playing game. If you fall for a song with me, I will never be the same.
It's your call. I did the live shows at Edinburgh, and I didn't hear much feedback of people couldn't understanding the Scottish. Although I feel we've known for each other for a long time, but yeah. In 2007 when you came to America for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to last night when you spoke on the mic, I mean, you have dove into becoming an American.
Well, I'm not going to say dove into becoming an American. I just had to learn to be understood by everybody. As the boss once told me, you know, maybe get a few elocution lessons because we need the world to understand you, not just Scotland. And Scotland could barely understand me because I was such a mumbler. I've watched interviews with myself. I don't understand myself from before I came to America.
Okay, so in my mind, you're just Scottish and that's how they all speak. But so it's really not being Scottish, it's being a mumbler.
Yeah, like it's being a mumbler and also the thick accent. I had a very thick accent when I first came over. And you know what Scottish accents sound like. You spent a lot of time in Scotland. Think about Grado, for instance. Think about that accent. That's a heck of an accent. He certainly doesn't mumble, but he uses every slang word imaginable.
It's very
hard to understand for Americans.
When you know how to slang the words is and the and.
He could slang numbers.
Right. wow. So, yeah. So did you go take lessons?
So yeah, I did a few.
Just a few?
On the boss's recommendation. We had, I think, one conversation. I was, you know, fired up about something. And now I can control myself whether speaking on the mics right now or a microphone or on camera, and I can make sure I'm understood. But, you know, in real life, I still slip into my real accent, the Scottish accent. I get a bit excited. And obviously, I got a bit too excited one day, and he just advised me to take a couple of lessons to make sure I could control my voice.
Listen, if I understood what you were saying, I couldn't tell you. I picture just like you're going like... You, and I assume the boss means Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that a taboo word? Or are we allowed...
Oh, yeah. I guess talk about him. He's the boss.
He's just the boss. Him and Bruce Springsteen.
Yes.
Right? But I just picture like you have this... I love the idea of you going into his office and just like spilling your heart and just being like everything you've ever wanted to say. You finally said it to him. He's just like, Drew, I don't know what the fuck you just said.
That's essentially what happened. Yeah, I had a habit of doing that whenever, like, I was never able to, you know, get my point across very clearly when I was fired up, which was obviously a detriment to myself. Like, I like to think of myself as pretty well-spoken and fairly intelligent, but whenever I tried to get a point across to people that matter, I was never able to get it across the way I wanted because I got so into it and so excited and fired up that they just stood and stared at me with a blank expression the whole time and went, okay, Drew, we'll take that under advisement.
Yeah, but what the hell did he just say? So was it like television or, I mean, what? So obviously the classes aren't what taught you how to speak. Is it just knowing to slow it down?
Yeah, it's just.
You weren't, nothing like molded you? There wasn't anything you took an example from watching Everybody Loves Raymond?
No, I never actually get into Everybody Loves Raymond. Maybe. God, what shows did I start getting into when I came over here?
Friends is a big one.
Yeah, I watched Friends when I was younger and like those kind of shows, but that didn't make a difference till I got here. I think being told what 50 times a day finally got the best of me.
And you thought you were just going to be the next Stone Cold Steve Austin with your...
The amount of times they said what, if I was paid $1 every time people said what to me in the past 8 years in America, I would be a multi-millionaire right now.
Do you like America?
I do like America. I'm still based here. I'm going to be based here, Tampa, Florida. I love being here. I miss home, but I'm at home a lot more often now. I'm home every 2 weeks, so I get to see friends and family, which is...
Home to...
Like Scotland. Or
to Glasgow.
Glasgow. I'm for here, which is about 30 minutes from Glasgow.
Okay.
But yeah, like every 2-3 weeks practically.
You're
now.
Home every 2-3 weeks?
Yeah, it's
How
great.
Does that work?
Usually a plane.
Thank you. There it is.
Now, usually, the way I'm being booked right now, there's a lot of interest back home. Because obviously I'm from Scotland, the UK, and, you know, Ireland is still, you know, in close proximity. Mm-hmm. So I've been going back and forth to various companies, especially the ICW. You've worked for yourself.
Do you want it? I mean, that's cool for the first couple of months, but do you envision yourself for the next 10 years, like every 2 weeks going to Europe?
I see there being, you know, something cemented over the next year rather than the next 10 years. Like right now, I have a very clear vision of the path I'm on and the things I want to do. And a big part of that is the ICW in Scotland. Like, as you know, it's booming right now. And
it's great.
I'm putting myself in as an integral part of it to get it to the next stage, which is TV. And if we get on TV, I'm going to be home a lot more often.
Man, I guess that's kind of interesting because to me, you're just Drew, right? I've known you forever, but... I always said, like, I was surprised when, like, Carlito's a good example of a good run on WWE television, global television, and then you would think, like, if anyone had the opportunity to, quote-unquote, pop the Puerto Rico islands, right? Like, it would be him. Like, he'd go back and do what his father did. And I guess is that the same path you're taking? And, like, no one's been from Scotland. Now all of a sudden, like, I was the Scottish guy, aside from the Highlanders, but I think you're a little more high profile. You know, like, I'm the Scottish guy, and now I'm coming back to save our country. Like, I mean, that's it, because obviously ICW is... The whole point is they've done it without any names, and they've done a great job. Like, all the stuff they've done, but, like, almost you're... Do you see yourself as, like, the cherry that could maybe push something over the edge, or...
Just
king of
the
Scotland?
Way I see it is, I don't mean the king of Scotland, but the way I see it is anything I can do. And, you know, thanks to WWE, I have been able to build this name over the past like 7.5 years. It's crazy to think about. I spent nearly my whole 20s in America. Just anything I can do in the name that I've built and the name they helped me build, that can help ICW just get to that next level. As you say, they were already selling out all over the place.
Yeah, I don't want, and I don't want people also, by saying that, I don't want people being like, oh, fuck, this guy's coming in now. He thinks he's the reason.
Oh, yeah, no.
Which can easily get you heat from everybody.
I would never like say that. They were already selling out everywhere. They're doing fantastic. The BBC documentary, The Insane Fight Club, which is on US Netflix.
Do you like this guy in that, huh?
So, hey, where are you wearing that? You showed up at the airport. Grado was dressed in his gear. For people that don't know, check out Insane Fight Club on US Netflix. One of the wrestlers was dressed in his gear to pick up coat at the airport.
I'd like to think all my listeners know Grado.
I think everyone knows Grado now.
I think he's part of the team.
I think right now he's very excited and his hand's slipping down his pants.
Yeah, hearing just us talking to about this, right? This is the coolest thing ever, he's saying.
Yes.
Did he say meeting you was the coolest thing ever? Oh, he had met you before you went off, right?
Yeah, I remember him back at shows when I was 16 doing shows and he was there. He would have been there when, like, I saw you when I was 16, 17 for the first time.
He was a staple fan, is that correct?
Oh, yeah. He was on the MSN, you know, working as all, like, going to start his own promotion and whatever else. He was trying anything to get into wrestling, and God bless him, it worked out in the end, and now he's one of the top names.
It's so fun, interesting, crazy.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about him for 2 minutes.
Yeah. Hey, look at him. So, yeah, you were 16. I want to say I knew you when you were 14. Maybe not. No. We did those shows for BCW.
Yeah. What year was that?
2004.
2004. So, yeah, 10 years ago. I'd be 18 probably that time.
Okay.
So I know I wasn't.
But you weren't like a rookie scrub. You knew the job to some extent.
Yeah. Like I was already
been in it for
working
a while.
Every weekend at that point.
Yeah.
Like I started when I was 14, 15. And I used to travel 12 hours to train to England because there was nothing in Scotland. And then we got Scotland started. And then we got a school going. And I kind of passed on what I was learning in England to everybody in Scotland. And then I was doing shows every weekend. And that's how I finally got better. And I was doing them on the reg at that point. That was my part-time job at school.
Your part-time job and doing school?
Sorry. Oh, like, yeah. Like I was always in school. Yeah. Like all the way through. I was in school right till I got signed by WWE. I was in university when I got signed. So I was always in school. This was always my job. Like,
And it's also good because like you can always, I did this too. It's like once you're out of school, like you, because I wrestled, not in high school, but throughout college.
Yeah.
And it's just like once I got out of school, it's like, oh, I can't justify this wrestling. Like the wrestling used to be like, I could do it because I'm doing school and like whatever. But then you have to get that real job.
Oh,
and
no.
Like, thankfully you never had to do it.
I couldn't envision that. I could not imagine myself in a real job ever. Like I remember instances of people finding out I was a wrestler. When I first started university, my first day, one of the girls had the register and she was Googling random names and she was just laughing like, oh, such and such, you're, I don't know, there's your gravestone, you're dead in Kentucky or whatever, or such and such. Oh, you're a famous businessman in this part of the world. Oh, Andrew Galloway, you're a professional wrestler, and it's actually you in a pair of underwear. Everybody flew around the computer. First day of uni, I'm sitting there like, ah, bugger. I was hoping to ease into this.
Oh, that's all right,
so,
though.
Yeah, that was an interesting first day.
What did you go to college? What did you go to college for?
College. I went to college for criminology.
Nice.
But I studied criminology. I wanted to do something interesting. Like with my exams in high school, I probably should have did business. I excelled in all the business areas, but I just wanted to do something, you know, to keep me busy before I went to America and became a wrestler.
With wrestling?
Yeah, that was always the plan.
You envision, and I guess at the path of, you got signed at what, 20?
21.
21. At that path, you hypothetically could have stopped doing college and just wrestled full time. Probably not a good living, but a decent enough.
Yeah, like I could have. I could have been with like Brian Dixon. I was already working with him. Like my summer holidays were spent with him. My whatever holidays I got pretty much from school, I was down there. And sometimes I missed some school, not proud of.
Yeah.
You know, to do like tours for Dixon just to get my experience level up as high as
possible. But had America not come knocking and you almost, let's say you had finished university, what was the plan?
There wasn't a plan. It was all or nothing. Like the way I always looked at it was
school.
There is no maybe, if, and or buts. It was just, this is what's going to happen. I was so convinced, and I'm always so convinced and have tunnel vision.
You were just like, I know once school ends, I'm going to America?
Kind of. Like that's like how driven I was. Like I tell people, you got to have this freaky tunnel vision if you want to do something. And that's the way I looked at it. I was just so freakishly obsessed. If you ask anybody what I was like back then, I was just, nothing could bother me. Didn't involve myself in the silly independent politics I don't believe exists because it still exists. And I'm seeing it again. I'm like, God, you got to be kidding me, guys.
Yeah, welcome back, buddy. Welcome back.
It's at the highest level and it's at the lowest level. It just drives me crazy. People just need to chill out. But yeah, I was always very driven, didn't involve myself in all that crap because I just knew, okay, got to do school. That's a sensible thing to do. But when I'm not in school, tunnel vision, going to America, going to wrestle. That's what I was always going to do.
I don't know. I'm not calling bullshit, but like it just happened. You told me right as you finished school, you went right to America.
Yeah, I was still in university when I got signed.
Okay, so but you weren't planning on like, well, I guess I'll get this job and still wrestle and try to get over to America. Like, yeah. I get the idea of the tunnel to America.
Yeah, I probably would have kept wrestling, I guess, and then figured out. Like, I didn't have a plan. It was just a case of perfect timing. Like,
it sounds like great timing.
Yeah, I couldn't have written it any better. Like, in my head, like, this magical plan in my head that's just so unrealistic, magically worked out.
Yeah. At 14, you were going to England to train?
Yeah, I used to take a train, 12 hours. It, like, took forever to convince my parents to let me go.
That's my big question.
Yeah, like, I started when I was 10 trying to convince them. Like, I was a weird kid. I sent away for Secrets of Pro Wrestling.
Yes.
With Dennis Brent and Percy Pringle when I was 10. And I had Volume 1 and Volume 2. I kept them in a briefcase because the books told me to keep kayfabe. So. I was a weird kid. I was lucky I was so big. I had to get beaten up.
Yeah, it's really, wow. I love it when, yeah, just because there's like the nerd wrestling fans and myself included, but then when there's the nerd wrestling fans and they're these giant human beings who are like super freak athletes like yourself, like it's just so fun. It's like, you seen the movie Bad Boys?
Yeah.
When John Sally is like the computer nerd and then he stands up and he's like 6'10".
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like it's not supposed to be him, but it's him. I love it. That's great. So you kept the secrets for wrestling.
I had a bunch of weird stuff in that briefcase. I was such a weird kid. That's just kind of my private thing. I didn't talk about it, you know, at school and whatever. Like maybe the wrestling, a couple of people. I was into like paranormal stuff and had weird subscriptions. I wrote to the FBI one time and, you know, they sent me documents that I asked for and my dad was waiting for me holding the package from the FBI when I was 10, 11 at the time. Like, Drew, why are the FBI from America sending you documents? Because I asked for them.
What documents?
I was into like the paranormal. It was Roswell and Project Blue Book and there was something else I asked for. And they sent all the like censored documents under the Freedom Information Act that just came out at the time.
You had like figured out that they have to send you this stuff?
Yeah. Like I had a subscription to a magazine that I was like finding all this stuff.
This is before internet too, right?
Internet was still it's infant stages. I had dial up, I think, back then. I was like 10, 11, so I would have to dial up.
So you found this stuff through the internet?
I found it through the subscription, the magazine I had at the time, which I also read about the Ebola virus, interestingly. And I asked everybody at the time, I said, what is this thing? This is horrible disease I'm reading about in this magazine. It covered like diseases, bugs, paranormal. It was this awesome magazine when I was a kid. And then now when I'm seeing it coming back, I'm like, holy crap, this is this disease I read about when I was a kid. Now it's going to wipe us all out.
Why didn't you write to the Ebola community and it would have been figured out?
I don't know.
What was the magazine called?
It's called X Factor. Not the singing show.
Sure.
But it was called The X Factor.
Were you into X Files?
Oh my God, that was my ish.
Yeah.
X Files.
Like, what else? Are you a Trekkie? Are you Star Wars?
No, I never got into Star Trek or any of that kind of stuff. I was more like Quantum Leap and X Files and like things like that. God, The Outer Limits, I liked.
Are you still into that stuff?
Yeah, like not as obsessively.
Like what? Like, but what tickles you? Like.
Yeah, it's more like, I guess, ghost-related stuff and, you know, diseases and stuff. Like,
what are you watching now?
God, these days, American Horror is a big one. Like, okay. I love that show. And no, I kind of watch the silly shows that are obviously fake, with the Ghost Hunters and all that crap.
Don't say fake, staged.
Sorry,
predetermined.
Predetermined, yeah. Like, it annoys me because obviously I believe in that stuff and I put myself in environments in the past where I've seen stuff and felt stuff. And like, I believe like in it because I've put myself in those environments and, you know, I have my own theories.
I'd like to hear them. I don't know if I knew. I mean, I know you're weird. I don't know if you're this weird.
Yeah, this was just my secret thing. Now I'm talking about it. Probably.
Yeah.
Like my private little weird stuff that I'm into. Yeah, like I just believe people live in different frequencies. Like a radio, you know, you twist a radio, you get different frequencies. I believe like we live in different frequencies and there's something going on. I don't necessarily believe in everything that's written down because it's obviously modified throughout time. You can't believe in that crap because it's obviously changed to suit whoever's in power.
Yes.
But yeah, I believe we're all living on different frequencies and there's a lot more. Take me an hour to go into.
Yeah, and I can also like, out of a fear of talking about it because you can't like talk about religion and that stuff without people like moaning and pissing, but like, you know, I'm a big believer in just like mythology and like even like the biggest books, like I don't want to get into it, but like the Bible or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like someone wrote a story and then it's obviously some people have changed it over the years and whatever.
Like, there's no maybe. I mean, it's obviously the case. It's just, if you believe in the foundations, you believe in certain aspects, then cool, but you can't take it literally. You're out of your mind. Like, one example, the priests used to be able to get married, and then they were when the priest died, the families would inherit the house. Can't be having that. We got to keep the money. Boom, you can't get married. That's a fact.
That's why I don't vote.
Oh, yeah. I wish I voted in bloody Scotland recently.
Oh, were you I or were you nay?
I was I never made it public. I didn't want to sway anybody.
Oh, we don't have to talk about it if you don't want to.
No, I don't mind. Okay. I spoke about it since.
I forget that, like, you probably could have, like, however you spoke on it would probably have a pretty big impact.
Yeah, like, even if, like, it affected even two people, like, I just didn't want to sway anybody. And there was a few people, like, high-profile people making their opinion known. Andy Murray was the biggest, obviously. He tweeted about it, and it caused a huge thing. Yeah, yeah, he's, like, pretty much the biggest.
Right, I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, he's Scottish, and he tweeted about it the day of or the night before or something, and it caused a huge thing.
And because it's a 50-50, it's almost, what was it, like 45-55?
Yeah.
So whichever way you go, there's going to be so many people who are then, same way as if you talk about religion or Bible or whatever, there's so many people then, like, there's going to be all these people with you, but then there's going to be just as much as people against you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I understand, like, each side, and understand why people would say no, especially the older generation who are, like, risking, you know, in their mind, their pension, the NHS, everything they've worked for. And then the younger generation were the ones who were predominantly voting yes. Not everybody, obviously, but, you know, most of younger people, like, they were the ones who were like, hey, we want to try this for our future. And the older people are the ones that were pretty much like, no. So we were like, well, we're the younger generation. You're not really thinking about us right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should be setting an example for them, is how I feel, because they're the ones that kind of took away the opportunity to try. And, you know, if David Cameron doesn't come through with the promises he made, if he does, cool, everything will be great. But if the Prime Minister doesn't come through with the promises he made Scotland, then there's going to be hell to pay for him.
What are the promises? That we won't make fun of you?
Yes,
we won't talk about fucking sheep.
Yes, like, that's exactly all his promises. We were like, yes, 55% say yes. I like that.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of, you know, more powers for, like, us in Hollywood, etc. More representation, like all that kind of stuff.
Did,
like,
you say for us in Hollywood?
Hollywood.
What's that?
So the Scottish Parliament, like, oh. Westminster.
I like the idea of there's more opportunities for us in Hollywood. Okay, So 10 years old, you want to go off to wrestling school. Is there any other, I know you said you kind of kept it hidden then, but do you have, like, a nerd friend that you do this with that want to be a wrestler with, or is this just, like, something you caught on by yourself?
The wrestling?
Yeah.
I had a buddy come down with me the first time. Buddy Craig, like, he runs a gym now in there. He's doing pretty good for himself. He was, like, the guy who kind of, you know, worked out with me, and he was taking classes, learning to become a personal trainer when we're like 15, 16, and, like, we kind of were working out all the time together. He came down the first time, and it was his birthday, and, you know what happens with some schools and birthdays, it was birthday chop time, and I think he got chopped about 50 times in his...
Took a 12-hour train just to get chopped 50 times.
Yeah, he didn't come back again. So it was just me traveling down from then on every single time. I think one buddy came down one time. I went down, like, constantly.
Was it a straight shot, the train?
No.
Okay, so, right, and you're young, you're a kid, you're, I mean, what kind of, I don't want to say what kind of parents, because I love the idea that they're for it. I love the idea that you never got hurt and you were looked upon. Was it Mark Sloan who was training?
Yeah.
So did they talk to Mark? And were like,
my mom talked to Mark, just to be sure. I was harassing her for years. I was writing away to different, like, schools. Like, it was only Hammerlock and a couple of people that put ads in, like, World of Wrestling was the magazine, Bill Apter's mag. Like, I would send, I'd write away to different people, you know, try to find information. And my mom was always like, no, you're too young. You just wait till you're 16. I pushed for years and years and years. And finally, I gave all the information. This is where it is. This is how I'd get there. I can pay for it myself. You can talk to the guy. And then she did. And then was like, okay, just make sure you check in with me constantly and make sure you're okay and you're with your buddy. So, okay, we'll do it. Just, you know, be constantly checking in with me.
And your dad?
He was just,
is he a dad? Just went with the flow? Whatever mom says.
Yeah, trying to wrap his head around, you know, still the wrestling thing. It's just like, just stick in school. That was always the deal. Just stick in school no matter what. Like, I you know, admire you've got these big dreams, but just as long as you stick in school, then cool.
Is your dad a big guy?
Yeah. No, as big as myself. He's like 6'2". His nickname is Big Andy. When I was a kid, I always used to always say to his buddies, like, one day I'm going to be Giant Drew. And then sure enough, I dwarfed him when I was about 14.
Yeah, you've always been tall, even at a young age. But so 6'2 at 14, maybe?
14, yeah. I was always really, like, ridiculously tall. Every school photo, if you see when I'm a kid, I'm, like, head and shoulders above everyone.
And so when you go, when you then start mixing in with the world of wrestling, it's hard because you're not a mature human being yet, but I bet these wrestlers saw you as a mature guy because you're bigger than most of them.
Yeah, I guess.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess. Like, and also, like, I'm from, you know, Scotland, so I'd been going to clubs and stuff since I was, like, 13. So we grew up kind of quick over there.
Really?
Yeah.
What, like, kind of clubs? Like, just, like, dance, drink clubs? Like,
you know, bars and nightclubs. And
13 years old?
Yeah, probably bars, 13. My buddy and I, think, started going to clubs when we were 14.
When was the first time you got drunk?
Yeah, probably about 13, 14.
Okay.
Maybe younger, actually. I don't know for sure.
I mean, but that's a right. That's how you do it over there.
Yeah. Like, it blows my mind that it's 21 over here and people, like, are acting like the way we would act when we're 15, 16. We get out of our system and kind of learn how to conduct ourselves around alcohol when we're younger. And over here, people are losing their minds at 21. I'm talking to 21-year-olds and I'm like, man, you sound like you're 15 from where I'm from right now. And, you know, people are growing up too late and they're getting themselves in trouble while they're at full-grown adults rather than getting the opportunity to get out their system when they're a little younger.
Yeah, but that's what you know, though. That's what you know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
God, I couldn't even handle myself at 15.
Well, I'm not saying I could handle myself. I was passing out all the time. Yeah. But, you know, I figured it out eventually. By the time I was 18, I was a pro. And that's the legal age in the UK.
I like it. The pro drinking team. So going down, training with them, who's down there?
At the time, it was Mark Sloan, James Tai, Justin Richards.
So that's right when, like, that FWA stuff was kicking off.
Oh, yeah. They would, you know, kind of got started. You know,
what year was it? 2002?
Yeah, it must have been about then, 2001, 2002.
Okay.
Yeah, and they just kind of started kind of getting going. I was talking to Christopher Daniels yesterday on the way to the show, and I mentioned to him, I was like, crap. I was like, no offense, but, you know, I was like 15, 16. I remember you and Doug Williams having the big feud at the time that I was all into, being from the UK. I was like, oh, man, this is the big thing going on right now. It's him and Doug. I was like, I don't know. I think he took it as a compliment, not, hey, man, I'm totally younger than you.
When you were, when I was a kid, the old when I was a kid. Yeah. Hey, he's been getting that forever, though, I think, Chris.
Oh, yeah, he's been around. I remember seeing him in the one documentary when he did this WCW tryout. Which one?
Oh, Beyond the Mat?
Was that Beyond the Mat?
He was... Oh, wait, hold on.
I don't know if it was a different one.
Well, he was in the Beyond the Mat. He was just an extra in WWF at the time. What was the documentary when... No, everyone on the internet's going to hate us. Well, there's a documentary when he was doing a WCW tryout?
I think it was WCW. He went for his moonsault and he landed in his head.
Yeah, but I think that was just Nitro.
Really?
Was it documented?
There was a documentary that was featured on... I don't know, there's so many.
Yeah. Wrestling Road Diaries, of course, the best.
Oh, so good.
Yes, thank you.
Can't get enough.
You've watched it a million times now?
A million and one now,
oh,
actually.
Oh, my God. Thank
I was watching
you.
It just before I came around here.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you did your homework. The Insane Fight Club. Are you jealous that I'm... Oh, you're going to be in the second one, too, though.
Yeah, because...
the BBC... When I was in Edinburgh, the BBC guy was following us around.
Yeah, they're currently working on the second one. They actually started filming the day I made my return. They caught me coming in the building and nobody knew except that Mark Dallas, the promoter, had given them the Iggy. Okay, Drew's coming back. So
yeah, and if
catch him coming in the back door, and I literally came in the back door.
And if you, I watched it on the internet, and like the place, you know, when I was fired from WWE, I went back to Ring of Honor, and I was like, I had a 90-day compete, but I haven't really told the story, but we kind of just said, I just said fuck it, and I went and did something with Ring of Honor, and I was a special. I was a Dragon's surprise partner, and then I came through and my music hit, and then it was the Hammerstein Ballroom, and just like place went fucking nuts, and like I'm on the second rope and like my knees are like shivering. It was just like the fucking coolest. It's just like after you're in that system and maybe you've been beaten down for so long, speaking for myself, probably speaking for you, but I'm not going to, you know, when you're just beaten down and like, and then you're just like all not justified, but it's like, it's rejuvenated from like those real fans. And I watched the ICW where you come out and then you take the hood off. And I don't know. I started getting like goosebumps in it just from watching it.
That was crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
So explain it. Like you.
I think you explained it pretty good. Like, you know, that scene in Pulp Fiction when Uma Thurman's OD and she gets a shot of adrenaline to the heart without the OD part, just the shot of adrenaline. It's just. And you can't describe the feeling when people react like that. And it's the back of your mind, like, I wonder how they're going to react.
Do they care anymore?
Yeah, like, how's this going to go? Like, I know I'm going to speak and I've got ideas, but am I going to be able to get them across properly? There's a whole bunch of stuff was going through my head, especially the way it was done when I spoke to Mark Dallas and we arranged it secretly. And it was only like three people in the know that I was coming. And I flew in with a hood on and sunglasses on to make sure no one recognized me. Scotland's such a small place. And I hid indoors for 3 days playing Guitar Hero with my buddies.
Nice.
Drinking. That's all I could do for 3 days, peering out the blinds just to make sure we kept it as secret as possible. Nothing's secret in wrestling anymore.
I love the most important thing of this promo is that you became an expert at Guitar Hero.
Oh, so good. Like, I was nailing Guitar Hero like crazy. But yeah, it was insane. We just wanted an actual secret in wrestling for once. And like, Scotland's such a small place and my business is generally in the national papers.
And people, I assume, like, expected you to come back, or were hoping, or like knew that, like, eventually, well,
yeah,
Drew's going to come back
eventually,
here, but when is it going to happen?
Yeah,
it happened kind of soon, right?
It to happen like a month after.
Yeah.
Like, when I spoke to Lamar Dallas, he was like, oh, yeah, looking forward to getting you back, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about dates. I know you can't do this one. I was like, why? Why can't I do this one? I want to do this one. This is the right one. This is the place I should come back. This is what's going to create an impact. And that's all I want to do right now is start creating an impact everywhere I go. And thankfully, it went as crazy as it did. And I can't thank everybody enough that's, you know, put it over and talked about it and gave me feedback. It's just humbling and just rejuvenated me, I guess. Like,
yeah.
Say, like,
and
just, I fell back in love with pro wrestling.
Right. And it's got to be fun where, again, I don't want to talk for you, but like, obviously, you're doing the 3MB stuff. And like, I know that's not exactly. I'm sure it was fun with those three, you know, but yeah. Like, I know. You want to be doing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind, you know, what I'm doing as such. I just want to wrestle is my big thing. You know, let's find an interesting character. And just give me 10 minutes and I'll lose every night. That's all I want to do is wrestle. Like, I've seen Claudio do it a million times. And, you know, he gets himself over because he's so good. And he'll lose a lot of the time. But through his wrestling.
A lot of the time.
Yeah, but yeah. Through his wrestling, he's so good. That's all I ever wanted was to get that opportunity to wrestle. And, you know, I obviously had fun with the guys and all that jazz. I can't really complain. It's just while I'm still young, I just want to, you know, get the wrestling part, you know, out of my system. And then eventually do the 3MB thing when I'm a bit older.
Right. That's a perfect.
I'm going to slow down. I'm all grizzled, brother.
Yeah.
That's 3MB mania running wild.
Yeah. When you're 45, you're going to be wishing you had the 3MB. Oh, yeah.
That's what I was looking at. I was like, oh, man, I'm 27 right now. I kind of want to, you know, wrestle. And I just came back from the wrist injury, especially. Like, I was hurt right at the start of 3MB. And couldn't do anything for 6 months.
What'd you do your wrist in on? I remember when you had that cast on.
Yeah, I broke my scaphoid and I was wearing I didn't know for about 3 months. I was playing with it every night, like, wow, my wrist feels weird. And dog
You're
sang.
Playing with your scaphoid?
Well, I was playing with my wrist. Like, I'd work out and I'd do deadlifts and I'd feel funny. And, you know, the doc checked it once. He was like, we'll just keep an eye on it. And a few months passed and finally I was just messing around with it and the training room and the Doc Sampson called me over and said, okay, we're getting that x-rayed. And sure enough, it was broken. So I wore a cast to wrestle.
And so you had been wrestling for how long, do you think, with a broken?
3 months at least.
What's a scaphoid? I mean,
it's like this. I don't mean any words I'm pronouncing wrong to do. It's like in here.
Okay. So
just underneath
under
your
thumb
for those who can't actually see us right now.
I'm going to say that's everybody.
But yeah, it's, you know, it wasn't cripplingly sore. And you know what it's like? We just kind of get on with things and you're always sore. And you just assume it's just another thing that's just going to go away eventually.
Right.
And sure enough, it was broken. So I'd been broke for about whatever 3 months. And I put a cast on and continued to wrestle for another couple of months with a cast on. And then eventually they called for an MRI and the bone was dying at each side. So there was no choice but to get surgery.
It was dying?
Yeah, like it wasn't going to be able to be repaired without some mega surgery, pretty much.
Did they put
a screw in it.
Screw in there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we had to do it no matter what. And this was literally as 3MB started,
yeah.
Like the week it started.
Yeah, I remember.
I wrestled Jinder, the superstars on during Raw, as a babyface. And it went really good. And I assumed that's the direction where we're going to go. And then the next day, 3MB was formed. And the following week, I think I got surgery. So it was not good timing for 3MB when the heater's bloody broken wrist.
And as like a lower card, sorry to say that. Like, I mean, you're higher than I ever was. So like as a lower card, three guys that like they're not really looking at, but seem to like, hey, whenever we need someone, you guys will do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did
Which
you,
was every show.
Right. you guys had your own business just to make yourself laugh and do, yeah. I'd imagine, right?
Yeah. So we were just having a good time. Like anything we're given in the end, we're still in WWE, still getting an awesome opportunity. You know, you can't just sit with a...
But it's not like eyes were like on you because it seemed like they didn't really give a fuck. So it's like, were you just popping yourself out there every night?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like, the best way to look at it is if you're having fun, they're having fun. Is that what I found, especially with 3MB. Like it was getting over in like places like New York and obviously Europe. It was huge. Whenever we went there, like people just like to see us having fun. And when we're having fun, they're having fun. You can't just force somebody to be a silly character if you're not into it and you've got the poo-poo face and you're like, I don't want to do this.
Yes.
Like we just took it as, okay, cool. In the end, we're in WWE. They gave us an opportunity. No matter how anyone feels about it, we're going to give it everything we have and we're going to have a laugh with it. And we had the best laugh we could.
I felt you guys did. You're like to, as an outsider, it seems like, well, you're going to go with it as much as you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
And organically, that's how that stuff, I mean, I don't know, I don't want to say it was cut short because you guys were on it for a while, but yeah, organically, it seemed like it did start, people started picking up on it a little bit.
Yeah, because we weren't actually doing anything, but just I think the amount of time, like eventually, like it takes time to get over. Like,
right.
Like no matter what it is, you can't ram something down someone's throat. It's just going to have to take time for something really gets over. I think we're together for about over a year and a half. I think people were just starting to, you know, either sympathize with us or get with us or just like, ah, these guys are just like funny. They're having a laugh.
Right.
I like them.
I like
and
it.
It was just kind of picking up. Yeah. And then we were on everything. So I guess that's what, like why it was kind of surprising. More than anything, when I got the call, I was like, all right, kind of surprised, but okay. I was just going to take this an opportunity to better myself and come back one day as a new guy.
And are you at, so there's different stages of when you're done. How are you feeling mentally? Was there a period of like, oh, fuck, what do I do? I know you said you're a man with tunnel vision. And of course, like, I talked to Wade after it. And like, I mean, I know you guys are close.
Yes.
And he said you were like in high spirits and ready to take on the world, which seemed nice.
Yeah, I was fired up,
right,
to be honest. Like, I obviously sat down for a second, a bit of a surprise, and went, okay, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to make something happen. Like, the first thought I had was, I refuse to be like everybody that just goes with the flow, flies under the radar, and hopes to be signed one day. I was like, ah, screw that. I said, I'm going to go out, I'm going to cause a bang, and I'm going to make sure I'm the most high-profile guy out there and create a bit of a reputation for myself by being myself.
Yep.
And that's all I've ever done, and thanks to a lot of people helping me out so much over the past... It's only been just over 2 months pretty much since I came back to the ICW return, and already I feel like I've done so much, and it's thanks to so many people helping me with that return, winning the Evolve title, my first match back, and just having so many good matches with so many people and traveling back and forth across the world, and it's been barely over 2 months.
Right.
It's going unbelievable, and I can't thank everybody that's helped me enough, or the fans enough, for their feedback saying, holy crap, Drew can talk. Weird.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest shock people have had. Say, it looks pretty good. It wrestles okay, but I can't talk.
And when you first got, when I was in OVW, you got there, you couldn't speak English.
That was my only language.
Yes.
Spoke caveman.
You were jumped on the road so quick.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because there's guys there. There was like lifers there, like hoping to get called up. You were literally there 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Wade was getting there 2 weeks after me. And I was on the road at that point when the time he got.
Unbelievable.
The writers and...
I think I remember because what would happen is at that point, now writers are there all the time. Now it was every 6 months writers would come down. And so what happened was the first time I was there, I didn't even realize it was every 6 months. I didn't even know what was going on. So like I did this shit promo. And I remember like Dave Lagana was one of the writers and he told me he was really excited. And I think I kind of shit the bed because I didn't even know what to do.
Yeah.
Like I thought we were just going to kind of go out there and everyone had this like scripted thing. And I didn't know you were supposed to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And so like I kind of fucked up. So I had to wait another 6 months till they finally came. But you were it seemed like that 6 months when they came was like the first day you were there.
Yeah.
And what did you,
first week.
Did you like knock it out? I don't remember.
It went really good. I remember speaking to them afterwards and I was really fortunate how it went. I think it was a case of we're missing a guy for this heel here. Oh, the new guy, just put him in. Remember they had matches, like everybody would work, you know, a match against each other and you cut a promo.
Right.
And I think, I can't remember who it was, but one of the heels I remember didn't have an opponent they wanted to look at. So they just said, oh, the new kid, he'll jump in. So they just gave me a chance. I had the kilt and that there and I cut a promo, you know, alluding that I was talking about my wang, but I was really talking about my kill, I think. something long and heavy.
There it is.
I'm trying for some my kill. But yeah, I cut some promo about that, and the match went pretty good. And I heard, like, I wish I could remember who it was, because they obviously helped me out a bit. And you know, I was pretty fired up because they were all there, and I just remember getting some really good feedback. And you know, a couple of weeks later, I remember talking with Al, and I think he was, you know, planning to, you know, help me out and give me like a bit of a rub with the TV title. We're about to do something, and then he's like, "I think you better take this call." And then I, you know, answered the phone, and I go, "Hello, Drew. This is Howard Finkel. So yes, you're going to be coming on the road this week." I was like, "What? All right." I just assumed that was normal. I was like, "Oh, cool. Okay, I'm going on the road."
Yeah, that's what I love, is that you thought that's exactly that's how it goes. Worked. Yeah. Fuck. And you didn't have a driver's license?
No.
Right?
No, I came from like the UK. Again, everything, as you know, is so compact, and I was going to uni, so it was all buses back and forth to uni. And when I was on the road, there was always like five of us. I would never end up driving. Like, just never took the time to get the license. And then, yeah, sure enough, went to America, was on the road, and like, wow, America, you gotta drive. I gotta get a license.
Do you have a license now?
I have a license. I've had one for a few years now.
Good.
I got one somehow in like 10 hours. Like, I went in with Wade.
You did take the classes?
When they were getting theirs. I think there was some kind of mess up. I don't want to mess myself up and lose my license here. But I went in, I gave my license a provisional gimmick over, and then I did a theory test because Wade was doing his computer test, and I was looking at the questions. I was like, God, this is so easy. I'll just do it, and if I fail, I'll do it again. I did it, and it was like, is this red? And it was blatantly red. This is a trick question here.
Yes.
Yeah, so like, I got 100% on that, and I was like, I'll do the driving one tomorrow because I know it's automatic cars here. And Seamus and I drove around the parking lot for like 45 minutes the night before, and went back in the next day, and then yeah, 45 minutes later, I had a license.
Unbelievable. Had I known, I would have never taken driver's ed.
I probably should have taken driver's ed. I've literally, like wrestling, I learned on the go.
Yeah, did you?
No idea where to learn.
And then were you driving on the road right away?
Yeah.
Was that like, I remember when I was 16 or 15 and it was like, I was panicked.
Oh yeah, I was like 22 or 23.
Still, but like, if you've never driven a car before.
I was pretty excited, I remember. I was like, this is like a video game. These automatic cars are great.
Yeah.
Like, I remember back in the UK, I took a couple of driving lessons when I was like 16 or whatever, and it's manual, and you got to get the bite, and it's so difficult and annoying, and I get so frustrated. Over here, I was like, man, this is just like a video game, except I can kill everybody with this machine.
Jesus, then you can. Do you know how to drive a manual?
No.
I have no clue how to drive.
No, I went back home to the UK one time, and I rented a car, an automatic, a full-size automatic, and if anyone that's not driven in the UK, obviously, it's the other side of the road to begin with, so I was never used to driving on that side of the road. I've only ever driven on the right side
funny.
Of the road. And
that's
also a full-size car, which is bigger than the lanes back home. The lanes are so small back home, and the cars are so small, so I'm trying to drive this giant car and these lanes that can barely fit in all over the place. My poor buddy beside me is, you know, clinging to the seat, freaking out.
Yeah.
That's the one time I drove back home from Glasgow and then never drove that rental car again. My dad drove back to the airport for me.
You just got one of those, like, smart cars. That's what they drive over there, basically.
Oh, yeah, the tiny cars. I didn't know if I could drive them. I'd drive, almost driven head onto traffic a couple of times because it's the wrong side of the road. And
when you go back to Scotland, do you just stay at your parents' house?
Yeah, like every time I go back, anytime I can get back home, I go back home, just because I got such little opportunity to do it over the years. Which
did really they ever
sucks.
Come to America?
Oh yeah, like a great family trip one year in Atlanta for WrestleMania. Like, my mom, dad, and brother came over, and we did WrestleMania week, and I put them in the W and took my mom and dad to the nightclub in there. If anyone has not been there, it's a pretty swanky nightclub.
Yeah.
My parents from small town Scotland sitting there like, what the hell are you doing? I just wanted to take them everywhere I possibly could. Then we drove across America to Raw and then to SmackDown, then drove to Louisiana. So we did like a cross-country trip over WrestleMania, Raw, and SmackDown. So
it was that like was that a good feeling?
Oh, it was amazing. That's the greatest family holiday we ever had.
That you could do that for your family.
Oh my God, it was beyond, you know, words, especially when my mom's not with us anymore. It's just one of the greatest memories I could possibly have, was having that opportunity, and WWE provided that opportunity
right
for me to be able to do that, and that's such a big memory for us.
Did you do WrestleMania match? Did you have a one-on-one?
I did not.
What was your, like, what was, if you're like looking back, what was the highest profile Mania thing you did?
Mania 26 be the main one I did. It was the Money in the Bank. I was IC champion. I was getting the bigger push at the time, and you know, everybody assumed I was going to win. which is probably why he didn't win.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's my mania moment, was getting pushed off the ladder by Matt Hardy and crotching myself. Like, I assumed I would glide gracefully like Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels of the past, especially Razor, he's such a huge guy. And he glided onto the top rope, crotch first. And I was like, I'm just going to glide. Stepped off the ladder, violently plummeted balls first.
Really?
To the top rope. Launched into the air back in the ring and lay there. I think I created about 50 new swear words when I was lying at ringside.
And I would say, not that I know, but I would say, like, you're in the moment. You wouldn't feel anything.
I usually don't. Like,
especially WrestleMania.
Yeah, I've done some mad stuff and been knocked out a few times and barely felt any of it. But you land balls first, falling 10 feet or whatever.
You fell. It didn't matter there were 70,000 people there.
Did not matter. If there's a million people there, I would have still been lying there screaming and swearing.
I love it. Who are your road buddies up there? Is it Baron Sheamus?
Yeah, I had a few. Like over the years, it just depended what show you were on and who was there. And
You come out of the system with like a friend that was like a friend that you didn't have before? Does that make sense?
Like WWE? Or?
Yeah,
a few. I made a bunch of friends. Like I made a few close friends, but yeah, many that I didn't have before. Obviously, the European guys were always buddies.
Like, but I'm saying you. I know you did shows with Barrett and Sheamus.
Oh yeah,
in Ireland
there for years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like obviously those guys are the obvious ones, but yeah, there's loads of the guys. I don't want to miss anybody out. So obviously the, you know, Jinder and Heath and I became close over that time. You know, Del Rio's a very good friend of mine. I'm just going to miss people. Like, I'll feel
okay.
Bad.
Okay, well, I don't know.
But no, I've got loads. Like, all the guys are
it's
great.
It's interesting to see like who's, it's just in a locker room, there's so many different minded people with different views and different things, and it's fun. And especially when people are characterized on television, and there is a real person behind a character that people don't know, like who's kind of who fits with who, if you will.
Oh yeah,
it's always interesting to see. Like, it's random to see who would become friends with who and who's like minded and whatnot.
Yeah, there is, I guess, a few. I can't think of any off the top of my head that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah,
there are like you and close buddies or road buddies. Swaggle. God, WLC.
The WLC, the infamous WLC match.
That's a hell of a match.
Are you still hocking down cottage cheese?
Not so much these days.
Let me tell you, this man, I don't know where he got this diet from, but it was a bucket of cottage cheese a day?
I got it from Sheamus, bastard. I assumed, but like when I was a kid and I was going to Ireland stuff, I was like tall, but I was kind of still skinny. And I was lean, but I was like, I got to get bigger. And like Sheamus was so big. And I'd watch him eat, and I was like, is this the trick? You got to eat so much? And he was like, yeah, that's majority of it's eating. And he was always cooking chicken breast and then munching down cottage cheese mixed with yogurt. And I was like, if I got to start doing this? He was like, yeah, lad, you got to do it. And that's how you get big. He was right, but oh my God, the most disgusting thing.
You've got to be,
would eat.
Can like, you even like look at it anymore?
No, cottage cheese and I are not friends.
Yeah, I mean, how many, like, at least a year you were eating cottage cheese straight, and then when I was gone, I don't know if that continued or whatnot.
No, one day I just couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't even eat chicken at the Foreman, like for at least 2 years.
I think everyone goes through that. Yeah,
like when Wade and I lived together, like we would just be eating constant Foreman chicken, and
it becomes like weird, rubbery.
Yeah, and we're taking it to training at the FCW, and
It's not even real food anymore.
No, I just was eating it just because I knew I had to eat it to stay in shape. It was tragic.
Yeah,
so tragic. Ugh.
And I mean, you've built this body. Are you big into the training, or
yeah,
how do you view that?